For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's September the 8th. We are in the end of Parshas Baalos, on page 796, the end of the story with Miriam and Aaron speaking about Moshe Rabbeinu. This will be the third and final shiur on this topic. The Gemara tells us, we're familiar with the story, that back when Miriam was a young girl, clearly she was far more advanced than a typical five-year-old girl, but nevertheless, when she was young, that at that time, Paro made a decree that all of the boys should be thrown into the river. All the boys who were born should be thrown into the river. And when that happened, Miriam's father, Amram, who was the Gadol Hadar, he was the greatest of his generation, he was the leader of the generation, so Amram, therefore, separated from his wife for fear of bringing boys into the world who would be murdered. And so he separated. When Amram did that, the Gemara says that many people followed his example. Since he was the leader and he separated from his wife, so many other people did the same. We know the famous Medrash, it's a Gemara, that Miriam came to her father and said that your action is worse than Paro's action. She said that, number one, Paro is killing the boys, but you are preventing not only boys but also girls from being born, number one. Number two, Paro is killing them in this world, but you are preventing them from this world and from the next world. It means at least if they're born and killed, they can get into the next world. But if they're not even born, then they're not even going to get to Olam Haba. And number three, she said that Paro is only a suffix, it's only a doubt whether it will take place or not. Because Paro is a Rasha, and who knows, maybe his plans will be thwarted. But you, she said to her father, you're a great tzaddik. We know whatever a tzaddik decrees comes true. So if you're separating, and that's your intention, then nothing's going to thwart that. You're a tzaddik. Nothing's going to be able to stop that. So you're a vada. You're a definite. So therefore, she argued that they should go back together. Amram listened to his daughter, and they had a chuppah, and they got back together. Whether it literally means they remarried, I don't know if they were literally divorced or not, whether they just separated, or they were actually divorced, whatever it is, but they came back together. The Gemara says that Aaron and Miriam danced in front of their parents, as if it were a chasana, maybe it was a chasana, and they were then back together. We know that 6 months later, Moshe Rabbeinu was born. Before Moshe Rabbeinu was born, Miriam had a nevuah, and her prophecy was, she told her father, told her parents, my mother will have a baby that will save the Jewish people, that will redeem the Jewish people from Egypt. When Moshe Rabbeinu was born, the Pasuk tells us in Parashat Shmos that Yocheved saw ki tov hu, that he was good. Different explanations are given for that. One of the explanations given in the Gemara and in the Medrash is that the house lit up. That when he was born, there was a light in the house that did not come from any physical means. Somehow it just lit up in the house. So when that happened, there was a clear sign that this was a special baby, that he was going to do big things. And when that happened, Amram kissed Miriam on her head. It says, Nashka al Rosha, and he said to her, your nevuah is coming true. we know that 3 months later they were no longer able to hide Moshe Rabbeinu, and Yocheved was forced to put him in a little floating basin in the Nile River, which was at least in any natural way would have meant he would die. He would either die because he would drown, the thing would capsize, or an animal would get to him, or he would starve. But there was no way for him naturally to survive under such circumstances. When this happened, Amram then gave his daughter a little slap on the forehead and said to her, "What happened to your nevuah?" So with that, Miriam then went to the Nile to see what would happen. Now, if you hold the place here on page 796 and you turn back to page 296, on page 296, Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, this is after Yocheved is forced to put Moshe Rabbeinu into the river. The Pasuk tells us, "Vateisatzav achoso meirachok," and his sister stood from afar. I want to emphasize that word "from afar." We're going to get back to that. Meirachok. Lidea, to know, ma ye'aselo, what would come of him, what would happen to him. The simple meaning is that she stood from afar to see what would happen to her brother, to Moshe Rabbeinu. Of course, the next part of the story is that the daughter of Paro, Basia, comes along, and that ends up being Moshe's salvation and ultimately the way we were saved. However, the Gemara says there's a double meaning here, that because Amram had said to his daughter, "What happened to your nevuah?" So therefore she stood from afar, Lidea, to know, Maye aselo, what would happen to it, to her prophecy. She went to see what would happen to her prophecy. What would happen to the prophecy that she had, that my mother was going to have a child that would save the Jewish people. It seemed that it came true with the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu, and now, as her father's pointing out, it seems like the prophecy is gone. So she went to go see what happened to her prophecy. And of course, Basia comes along and takes Moshe Rabbeinu out of the water. The next part, I just want to finish off the story here with Miriam, even though this next part is not going to be as directly related to what we're talking about. What we just spoke about now is going to be very, very important for our discussion. But after Basia takes Moshe Rabbeinu out of the river, so then the Medrash fills in over here what is not written in the Psukim, which is that she tried to get Moshe fed. Moshe was a little baby, he was 3 months old, and she tried to get him fed. She found Egyptian wet nurses who tried to feed him, and he refused to nurse from the Egyptian women. So the Medrash tells us the reason why he refused to nurse, the Gemara says, is because the mouth that is eventually going to speak directly to Hashem could not nurse from a non-Jewish woman who, of course, consumed non-kosher food. In halacha, it is permitted. It is permitted for a baby to nurse from a non-Jewish woman or a woman who does not eat kosher. It is permitted. There are those who are stringent who don't do it, but in the pure baseline halacha, it is permitted. But Moshe Rabbeinu refused to drink because he was going to speak to the Shekhinah later on. Obviously, he didn't make this decision, but that is what happened. So therefore, Miriam steps forward, which means that she's still there. She's still hanging around. As Basia is trying to get Moshe Rabbeinu fed, Miriam is still there in the background. She has not yet shown herself, but she's watching what's going on. Now, if she's watching what's going on, I imagine it doesn't all take place at the river. I would imagine Basia took the baby inside or sent for wet nurses to come, wherever it was, and they're trying to feed this baby, and the baby refuses to eat. So the Pasuk tells us in Pasuk Zion verse 7, Vatomer acho so el bas paro, his sister said to the daughter of Paro, Ha'eleich v'karasi lachi shamei nekes, shall I go and call you a wet nurse? Minho ivrios, from the Jewish women, v'seni klachas hayaled, and she will nurse for you the baby? Vatomer la bas paro, the daughter of Paro said to her, Lechi go, v'telech ha'alma, and the young lady went, which means she went very quickly, Vatikraes em hayaled, and she called the mother of the baby. And Yocheved ended up nursing her own baby. Moshe Rabbeinu ended up nursing directly from Yocheved as before, and did not end up nursing from anybody else. Pasuk Tes, verse 9, Vatomer lo bas paro, bas paro said to Yocheved, Hei lichi es hayaled hazeh v'hinikiu li, take this boy and nurse him for me. Va'ani atenes sichareich, and I will pay you. The woman took the baby and she nursed him. The Gemara says, Tzadikim, referring to Yocheved, not only does Hashem return their lost objects to them, but they get paid in the process. And Hashem returned to her her baby, and she gets paid to nurse her own baby. The Gemara says, blames that on the fact that she is a tzadikas. That's what Hashem does with tzadikim. So Miriam here engineered not only that Moshe Rabbeinu nurses from a Jewish mother, but his own mother. That is brought about by Miriam.
I forget, how old is Miriam?
Miriam was 6 when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. So her nevuah took place when she was, I assume, 5 or going on 6, or right around there. That's when it all took place.
Yocheved was really old.
Yocheved was old. Yocheved was...
So, like, the daughter of Paro
really
has this old lady coming to nurse.
Yeah, but I don't know if she looked how she her body returned to its youth. That's what it says. She was 130 when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. But it says that the anes happened and she became youthful again. So I don't know if she also appeared youthful. I don't know, but that's what it says.
Did Miriam walk to the palace?
Don't know. Doesn't tell us. She must have been a very resourceful young lady, right? I mean, she's standing there alone from afar at the Nile, watching what's going on, and she does not show herself until this moment, and then she steps forward and says the right thing at the right time. She clearly was very resourceful, and she knew what she was. She understood things clearly.
Well, she had nevuah.
She had nevuah. This is right. She
didn't freak her out.
Right. We're talking about a very special person. So that is the story over here. Now, Miriam, one has to ask a question on the entire story. Now, I'm going to ask the question the way I think most people will ask the question, but the truth is, the question really can be asked more strongly if you look at both sides of the coin. When Moshe Rabbeinu was put in the Nile, so Amram says to his daughter, says to Miriam, he gives her a slap on the head, says, what happened to your nevuah? So what is it, her fault? I mean, what does that mean?
What happened to his bitachon?
What happened? What is that? You've got to be careful. It's about Amram. But what is that? Amram is one of the people who never did an Avera. Never did an Avera, right? He's one of the 4 people listed. He's one of the 4.
But leaving Yocheved wasn't an Avera.
No, it was not an Avera. It was an appropriate choice, which then she explained. Miriam's not. But I'm saying he never did. He's one of the 4 people listed who never did an Avera. Talking about a great person. So, but what is this? How does it sounds like he's blaming Miriam? And Miriam took it to heart. She went to go see what happened to the nevuah. But the truth is, the question really starts before that. Because no one asked it at this point, because now it seems like it makes sense. This part, everybody thinks makes sense, but it really doesn't make sense. She says, my mother's going to have a baby that's going to save the Jewish people. The baby is born, the house fills with light. Amram kisses her on the head, and says, ah, your nevuah is coming true. What does that do with her? Why does she get a kiss on the head? Mm-hmm. Meaning, if you're going to ask the question, why did he give her a slap on the head? You have to ask the question, why did he kiss her on the head? In other words, Amram clearly is under the impression that the nevuah's efficacy is tied to Miriam. It's coming true is tied to Miriam, and it's not coming true is tied to Miriam. That's clear. Amram blames it's coming true on Miriam. Blames meaning he gives her the credit. He gives her a kiss and says, oh, your nevuah is coming true. In other words, you're the cause. And then when it seems like it's not coming true, he says again, it's because of you. And Miriam goes to see what's going to happen to the nevuah. So what is that? How is it that Amram, we have to believe Amram is correct, if Amram is understanding that this is tied to Miriam, what is this that the nevuah is tied to Miriam? Yeah.
Maybe the club the second time was to find out, did you get any new nevuah that will know what will happen on Moshe?
I imagine she would have told him. I think he was trying to motivate her to do exactly what she did, which is to go out and see what's going to happen. But what is this tying the nevuah to her? She has a nevuah. Simply, a Navi is just repeating or announcing what Hashem told the Navi. That's what a Navi is doing.
At the higher level, the clearer the Navi is going to be.
So that's
maybe,
correct.
Maybe he thought that she got it muddled, that the... Maybe
okay,
but thought it was clear.
It could be, but nevuah, when it happens, even though it's less clear than Moshe Rabbeinu, it's still not unclear. It's not like it's a jumble. There's an understanding there.
But you see that he got together right again because of this little 5-year-old telling him something.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a lot of
faith.
He put a lot of weight into her co-op.
Yes,
and
without question.
And so that he believed so much that she could be right that he got back together.
Yes.
And
yes.
So...
Yeah, but that was without the nevuah about mm-hmm. about Moshe Rabbeinu. That was just the argument.
You said one of the three things that he said and you're going to have
a... No, that was afterwards. That she argued logically. It wasn't nevuah. She argued logically. She said that you're killing the girls too. You are... you're taking away Olam Haba. And you're for sure going to, yours is definite, his is not. Those are logical arguments. And he agreed with her when she said it. She convinced him, and he went back. Then, afterwards, she had a nevuah that my mother's going to have a baby. Which is very important. That sequence is very, very important, as we're about to explain.
Don't we understand that a positive nevuah has to come
okay,
true?
Can nevuah not come true? That's the question you're asking. Is it possible that a nevuah will not come true? Okay, so then if that is the case, then the question is stronger. What is he saying to her? Okay, good. So hold that thought. Okay.
Just ask, do Amram and Yocheved have nevuah also?
So they don't have nevuah about this.
I know, but they have nevuah, so they know
are
what
they
it is.
Are they Nevi'im?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't have a record of them getting nevuah. We have a record of Aaron getting nevuah. We have a record of Miriam getting nevuah. We don't have a record of Amram... not that I know of Amram or Yocheved getting a nevuah. That doesn't mean they didn't, but we don't have a nevuah that was for all generations. So it's called Doros that we don't have.
Well, that's what I was just asking, because if they didn't, then it would put different weight on Miriam getting nevuah.
Okay, very good.
And understanding it.
Very good. Okay. Yes.
Maybe he sees her tied to this.
Okay.
She's part
okay.
of the whole.
Excellent. Okay. Miriam, we know. In hindsight, but from what we know, is 1,000% tied to Moshe Rabbeinu and to us getting out of Mitzrayim. Miriam is the representation of what Chazal say, "Bizchus Nashim Tzidkanios Yatzu Avosen Mitzrayim," that because of the righteous women got out of Mitzrayim. Miriam is the one who leads the women in Az Yashir after Kriyas Yamsuf, and the Chazal say the women were certain that Hashem would do miracles, and they brought instruments, musical instruments, out of Mitzrayim. Miriam is the leader of that bitachon, of that faith in Hashem. Miriam is the trigger through which Moshe Rabbeinu is born. she convinces Amram and Yocheved to get back together. If it wasn't for her, they never would have gone back together. Moshe Rabbeinu would not have been born. She brings them back together. Hashem gives her the nevuah about Moshe Rabbeinu's birth. She's the one who ensures that Moshe Rabbeinu nurses from his own mother. Miriam is the catalyst for Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, of course, her parents are, of course, the catalyst for Moshe Rabbeinu. That's a biological catalyst. But in Shamayim, the one who is making it happen is Miriam. Miriam is the orchestrator of the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu. As we have found that you find that there are women in Tanakh who are the great orchestrators. The greatest of them all is probably Naomi, who orchestrates the eventual birth of David HaMelech through what she does with Rus and Boaz. We explained that when we learned Megillas Rus. She's the great orchestrator. Miriam is also an orchestrator. She's an orchestrator in bringing about Moshe Rabbeinu. Through her comes Moshe Rabbeinu. That we know. Amram evidently understood that this prophecy that this young woman has is not simply an announcement, but rather it is an announcement that ties her to the announcement. Amram realized, he would have naturally asked the question, as was just pointed out, why would the nevuah come to Miriam? After all, what about her parents? What about me? What about my wife Yocheved? Why didn't we get the nevuah that we will have a child that will save the Jewish people? Miriam's nevuah was, my mother will have a child that will bring the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. Why didn't her mother get the nevuah? Her mother was no less a tzadekes. Her mother at 130 years old reverted back to being a young lady to have a baby. She obviously was a huge tzadekes. She's the daughter of Levi. So why didn't she get the nevuah? Amram understood, since Miriam brought us back together, and it's through her that we're able to have Moshe Rabbeinu, then the nevuah being given through her is the sign that it's tied to her. That she's the one who is, now listen carefully, is going to make it happen. You see, it's not that she's to blame or not to blame. She's a young girl. She didn't do averos. She wasn't doing terrible things. It's not that she did something bad, but she's the one who will trigger this. Just as she triggered her parents getting back together, she's going to trigger the nevuah. So when the baby was born, Amram surmised, she, Miriam, must have triggered it. Did she trigger it by bringing us back together? Was that the entire thing? Was there another thing that she did? It's immaterial. She's the trigger. So he gives her a kiss, and he says, your nevuah, it's yours. You own it. Your nevuah is coming true. When the baby is put in the Nile, Amram understands Miriam has a role to play that she has not done yet. There's something that she needs to do. And he gives her a tap on the head. And she says, what happened to your nevuah? What he's saying to her is, you have more to do. There's a role to play here that you still need to do. And therefore, Miriam goes out with that encouragement. She goes out. She doesn't know what the trigger is going to be. She doesn't know. There's no instruction manual over here. The baby's in the Nile. There's nothing she can do about that. If she would take the baby out, the baby will be killed. A Jew having a baby, that's it. The baby's dead. So she can't take the baby out of the Nile, but she goes to see what will happen low to him/it. It's the same thing. To Moshe Rabbeinu / her prophecy. What's going to happen to that? And she goes and she watches. And she watches and waits and bides her time. Perhaps she even follows Basak, because we don't know where Basak goes after she gets Moshe Rabbeinu out of the Nile. And she stealthily watches and waits. And when she sees an opportunity to be effective, she steps in. And she triggers that Moshe Rabbeinu will be reunited with his own mother to be nursed. Which means that now he is being raised, at least until he's weaned, by his own mother in that environment. So Miriam, therefore, has more of a role to play, and she does so. Yeah.
The thing that bothers me about that logic is that mean that Yosef was a trigger for himself to get sold down to Egypt because he also orchestrates so that his dreams come true.
Okay, that's a whole other discussion.
That's what's bothering me.
Yeah,
about
no,
this.
But we discussed that at the time. There is an orchestration there as well. But we discussed that at the time. That's a whole. You're right. There is orchestration there, but that has to be explained in depth. Yes.
So Miriam gets credit for in her spus the water, the wells, because she protected Moshe. Why doesn't Amram? Because he spurred her.
It's true,
to
but
do that.
Clearly Hashem is putting it in Miriam's. She got the nevuah, and she's the one who brought them together, right? It was her logic.
Yeah.
She convinced her father. That's no mean feat. I mean, you know, her
right,
father's
but the water part. I'm saying the.
Yeah. Okay.
Because he said to her, "Go."
Good. Well, he didn't say to her, "Go."
Well. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
He made it clear to her, you have more to do here. Mm-hmm. That you have a role to play. Okay. She then went and figured it out.
Okay. So Lo is him, and Nevuah is.
Okay. Yeah, they would have been Lo.
Chazal, what can you think of it a different way that would be a Zohar that would be fitting?
I'm not sure. Chazal say, let's see, let's actually bring it over here. I don't think Rashi. I don't think Rashi says here. Chazal just say the Nevuah. Maybe it means.
I'm trying to think about it somewhere.
Yeah.
Because it didn't bother him.
Mara.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Mara.
It's a good question.
Mara is Zohar Nachar, right? Mara?
Yeah.
Zohar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe. I'm not sure. Now, so Miriam, therefore, is the one to bring about Moshe Rabbeinu, which therefore means, by extension, she's the one to bring about the Geula, the redemption from Mitzrayim. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who is front and center, he's the one who's doing everything, but she's the one who brought about Moshe Rabbeinu. So she is therefore the representation of those righteous women who got us out of Egypt, because she's the one who brought about Moshe Rabbeinu. Now we have on page 796, we have the story with Miriam speaking about Moshe Rabbeinu. So here we have the what seems to be the reverse, because now she says something negative about Moshe Rabbeinu. We've already explained what was the mistake. Chazal tell us on the very last pasuk on page 796, Tezayin 16. I'm sorry, 15. Tezvav, second last pasuk. Vatisagir Miriam Michutz Lamachane Shivas Yamim. Miriam was locked up for 7 days outside the camp. V'ha'am lo nasa, the nation did not travel ad ha'asef Miriam till Miriam was gathered in. Why didn't they travel? They couldn't control it. It had to do with when the cloud moved. So why did Hashem not allow the cloud to move until Miriam was gathered in? Chazal say, because Miriam waited for Moshe Rabbeinu at the Nile. Since Miriam went to the Nile and waited to see what would happen with Moshe Rabbeinu, measure for measure, the people waited for her. Mida keneged mida. That's what Chazal say. Rashi brings that over here. Rashi says, it's the last Rashi in this parsha, in Parshas Baloscha. Zeh hakavod cholak lahamakom. This honor Hashem gave to her. Bishvil sha'achas shenis akva lemoshe, because of the one, whatever it is, time frame, a sha' can be an hour, it can be a moment, it can be a time frame, that she waited for Moshe, kishahushlach liyar, when he was thrown into the Nile, shenemar, as the verse says, vateisatzav achoso meirachok, that his sister stood from afar. We asked last time, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu in Pasuk Yudal 14, V'avio yorok yarak befaneha, her father spat in her face, halo sikolem shivas yamim, she'd be shamed for 7 days. Tisoger shivas yamim mechutz lamachane v'achar tayasef, So she needs to be locked up for 7 days outside the camp, and then she'll be gathered in. We pointed out last time that really what the pasuk is saying is that if for her father she'd be shamed for 7 days, then for the Shechina, for being shamed by Hashem's divine presence, then it should be much more than 7 days. It says 14 days in the Gemara, but it should be many days. However, we have the concept of daya. We explained it last time, that it's not going to be any more than what we are learning from. So the source is her father shaming her, spitting in her face. She'd be shamed for 7 days. Therefore, she needs to be outside of the camp for 7 days. That's what Hashem says. The question is, what kind of a statement is that? That her father spitting in her face. First of all, we have no record of her father ever spitting in her face, so it's all theoretical. And second of all, who says she'd be shamed for 7 days? Maybe she'd be shamed for 2 days. Maybe she'd be shamed for 70 days. Who told you that if her father would spit in her face, it would be 7 days? It seems like the Torah is saying that as if it was a given, as if it was something obvious. Well, of course, if her father would spit in her face, she'd be shamed for 7 days, so she needs to be out of the camp for 7 days. Where does 7 days come from? If any of us would, God forbid, be shamed by a parent, so perhaps we'd be shamed for less than 7 days, perhaps we'd be shamed for much more than 7 days. Where does it come from, this 7-day thing? The Daras Zekinim Baal HaTosfos says that we know that there is a minimum amount for the punishment called minuda. Minuda means excommunication, being put in cherem. Being put in cherem, being excommunicated, was a powerful tool in the time of the Mishnayos and the Gemara. It was used, and it was effective. A person who was put in cherem, was excommunicated, it wasn't simply people could not talk to that person. It was much broader than that. No one could do business with that person. No one could come within 4 amos of that person. And it was typical for a person who was put into cherem to observe the laws of Shiva, to take off their shoes and sit on the floor. And the minimum time of cherem, of being excommunicated, was 7 days. And so, had her father shamed her, meaning not shamed her as in embarrassed her, but spat in her face. Spat in her face. Why would that ever happen? As we explained last time, there's another place in the Torah where we find the term spit in his face. It doesn't mean spit in his face. It means spit on the ground in front of him. I mean, befanav means in front of him, not in his face. Where do we find that term, spit in front of him?
Chalitza.
When a man whose brother dies without children, and there is a mitzvah for the brother to do yibum, to marry his sister-in-law, normally a sister-in-law would be prohibited even after the death of her husband. That's one of the arayos. It is considered incest in the Torah. A brother-in-law and sister-in-law are never allowed to marry. This is the only exception. And in this case, it's a mitzvah. And that is because the brother died without children. And therefore, it is a mitzvah for the brother to marry the sister-in-law. It is in this week's parsha. What's the purpose of this mitzvah? What is the intent of this mitzvah? The Torah itself says so. It is to preserve the name of the brother, that the brother should have offspring, the one who died. That's the purpose of this mitzvah. This brother doesn't want to do that for whatever reason. It's considered to be selfish that he doesn't want to do that. And therefore, there is a system for not doing it. And that's called chalitza. The process of chalitza involves the sister-in-law taking the shoe off of the brother-in-law, as if to imply that the brother-in-law has lost the right of his mobility, that he's behaving in a manner that loses his right to mobility, and then she spits on the ground in front of him. And that is necessary. It must happen. She must spit on the ground in front of him. What is spitting? We know that spitting is a form of disdain. It's a form of showing disrespect. As if to say, you are being selfish and don't want to perpetuate the name of your brother, therefore you are shamed by this sister-in-law. She spits on the ground in front of him. Now, I just want to point out that today we don't do Yibum. We only do Chalitza. Be'ez Hashem, when we get to the parasha of Yibum and Chalitza, we will explain what has changed. So today that is what is done. But still, the intent of Chalitza is one that shames and shows disdain for this brother who is not going to perpetuate the name of his deceased brother. Those who are there when this happens, the Torah says that they are to proclaim, Beis Chalutz HaNoal, Beis Chalutz HaNoal, Beis Chalutz HaNoal, the house of the removed shoe, the house of the removed shoe, the house of the removed shoe. He gets a title that he now has as the one who had Chalitza done, because it is not considered to be a good thing. Again, today we have to do that, but really the better thing would have been Yibum. Hashem says, Amram, who is not living at this time, Amram spat on the ground in front of Miriam, and she was shamed for 7 days. He didn't actually spit on the ground in front of Miriam, but he did do something for which she felt shame. She felt pushed away, excommunicated, so to speak, for 7 days. When did that happen? When did Amram ever do anything that would be somehow connected to something like this? So the Das HaKinim Bala Tosfos says, he quotes it from somebody else, he says, because remember the pasuk that I emphasized the word, Vateisatzav Achoso Me'rachok, that she stood from afar. The simple meaning is far away from where the river was, so no one would see her. She was hidden away from the river, she was watching, but far enough away that she could watch and unobtrusively. That's the simple meaning. But the double meaning is from afar from her father, because she felt responsibility for this nevuah, and something needed to be done, and therefore she felt that distance. Whether Amram intended for her to feel that distance or not, I don't know. Again, Amram never did an Avera, so it is possible that he didn't intend for her to feel that distance, but she felt that distance. She felt distanced. And the Das HaKinim Bala Tosfos suggests, not his own, for he brings from somebody else, that that may have been a 7-day distance. Because the word Me'rachok, distanced, implies something like tsaras, which is 7 days, or excommunication, which is 7 days, or shiva, which is 7 days. All these things go together as 7 days. And therefore, here the Torah says, her father, when he distanced her, it was for 7 days. She felt it for 7 days. Not that he pushed, he didn't say you may not come home for 7 days, but she felt distanced for 7 days. That means, we ask the question, I don't understand, if a father shames a child, who knows how many days the child will feel distanced for? Whether it'll be 2 days, maybe 20 days, we don't know. But here it happened, and she felt distanced for 7 days. So if we have a precedent, therefore, here also, she needs to be distanced for 7 days. However, the camp did not travel. The circle is so complete over here, it's unbelievable. Just as when she was distanced the first time, she stood at the river and waited and watched for Moshe Rabbeinu, so here when she is distanced for 7 days, measure for measure, the camp waits for her. as Chazal say. And therefore, they do not travel until after she's gathered in. And that brings together the story from Parshas Shemos to the story over here. Miriam is tied to Moshe Rabbeinu not only in his being brought into this world and then cared for by his own mother, but we find her tied to Moshe Rabbeinu in our deeper understanding of who Moshe Rabbeinu was. She here is the trigger through which we learn the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy. Remember, the mistake that she and Aaron made on their level was one in not fully appreciating that Moshe Rabbeinu was naturally on the level of Aspachlaria Hamira, of the clear glass. We learn that through Miriam. Had Miriam not spoken the Lashon Hara, I'm sure we would have learned it a different way. But that's not what happened. What happened is she did speak the Lashon Hara, and therefore we learn it through her. It seems to me, this is conjecture, but it seems to me, had she not spoken the Lashon Hara, we also would have learned it through her. But it would have been a different way. How would it have been? I don't know. But Miriam is the catalyst for Moshe Rabbeinu. She's the catalyst for his being brought into the world. She's the catalyst for him being cared for. And she's the catalyst for our deeper understanding of Moshe Rabbeinu. Miriam is forever tied to Moshe Rabbeinu. And her nevuah was that first indication of that very, very powerful bond between Miriam and Moshe Rabbeinu.
I'm sorry, Miss Leslie, you may have talked about it. That's why the pasuk Pesukim earlier, it specifically states that Moshe was had the most anivus of anybody else.
Yeah.
She had to bring out his midah of anivus.
I mean, he wouldn't have brought it on himself. Good. That's a nice point. That's a nice point.
Is there some like explanation that because of her whole relationship and her understanding of how she made things happen for Moshe, that she felt an achrayus here to if this was right, to make it right?
That's what the Chafetz Chaim says. The Chafetz Chaim says that she, because she felt responsible for Moshe Rabbeinu, therefore, if it was something that she perceived was not right, she felt she needed to get involved. Which is true. She made a mistake, but the sentiment was not wrong. The sentiment was correct. And that is throughout Miriam's life, you find that she is tied to Moshe Rabbeinu.
So since this is like one of the very big examples of Lashon Hara that we're supposed to learn from, so if she had that feeling that she had to fix it, she should have spoken to Moshe. That's what we said last time.
That was a suggestion. I don't know. Perhaps that's what she said. I don't know. But that was a suggestion. I want to just emphasize that the pasuk of remembering what happened with Miriam is this week's parsha. And therefore, we have a much greater understanding, having gone through this the past 3 weeks, of this entire episode. And therefore, when it says, you should be careful with Saras, and then it says, remember what happened to Miriam, this is what it's all about. That's what we've just gone through over here. And to keep in mind that bond between Miriam and Moshe Rabbeinu.
And is that why that is one of the 6 things that we have to remember?
Well, I mean, it says Zohar, that's what you have to remember. Because it sort of says to remember it.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.